Well, today we are concluding our series, Better. And if you're new or you haven't caught up with the first two messages, you can download these for free. Just download our app or it's on the website, all for free. But let me give you a quick recap of where we've been. Kind of the premise of the series, the promise of the series is this, that we believe, and this is what we're hoping, that we can make this year better than last. And that's what this series has been about, how to make this year better than last. So we've been talking about how to do that. Last week, Andy gave us a fantastic question to think through. A lot of times it's about what do we want to add on to the year? But Andy asked us a counterintuitive question, and that was this. What are you holding on to that's holding you back? What are you holding on to that's holding you back? And then in week one, we talked about this. We talked about the consistency effect, the consistency effect. And we said that we come into the new year and we're all committed to the new workout plan or the new diet plan or the new financial plan. And commitment is awesome. But commitment is only half the process, because commitment will get you to the starting line, but consistency will get you to the finish line. That commitment will get you to the starting line, but consistency will get you to the finish line. So what we said is we asked you to look at five areas of life, financial or physical or spiritual or maybe relational or in your career. Take one of those areas, try to find a habit that, you know, you would could say, I've lost some momentum in this particular area, Jeff. And then we said this. We said, this jar of marbles represents the brand new year, all the days of the new year. And then our goal, our challenge, is to just simply do every single day, because we said small things, small positive things over time really add up to something really big. So what is that thing that we need to be more consistent, that more habit that we need to be more consistent in? And our hope, and this is what we're hope for all of us today, is when we get to the end of the year, we will have more marbles over here of consistency in that one particular area. And the more marbles of consistency we have, the better this year will be than last. So we're going to build on that by giving you another principle that will have a huge effect on our lives. And it combines with what we were talking about in week one. As I said, we talked about the consistency effect. When you combine this effect with what we're going to talk about today, it is a fantastic, powerful way that you and I can implement into our lives that can help make this year better than last. So here's where we're going for a few minutes today. To reveal what this other principle and this other effect can be, we're going to listen to a story that Jesus told. And the fascinating thing about Jesus, whatever you might believe about him, what we're discovering is that Jesus is a lot smarter than we maybe give him credit for. And what I mean by that is Jesus was a storyteller. And we're like, oh, that's a nice, you know, Jesus told stories. But do you know what the business world is now discovering? This is really cool. They're a little late to the game because Jesus is already there. But basically what they're discovering is if you want to communicate information about the business, one of the best ways to do that is to do it in the context of stories. Actually, stories provide clarity many times better than data and spreadsheets. I know that's a shock to some of us. But what we want to understand is as Jesus tells us these stories, he's illustrating a very important point. So we're going to eavesdrop in to a story that Jesus was telling to his disciples. And we're getting this from a guy named Luke. Now, Luke was a doctor, an incredibly smart man. And he wasn't an eyewitness to this, but basically he did an investigative study, talking to the people who witnessed all this. And he shares this story with you and me. But the cool thing that Luke does to introduce this story is he gives us the bottom line. He kind of gives us a hint to where we're going today. And this is where we're going. This is the bottom line of where, according to Luke, and this will tie in to this consistency effect and this other effect. He said, then Jesus told his disciples a parable. There's a story. So Jesus is telling them a story, and in that story, he's gonna give us something that's really, really helpful. He could just say this, but instead he wants to give us a story to illustrate why this is so important for you and me. So then he told his disciples a parable to show them that they should, and according to Luke, here's the bottom line, always pray and never give up. Always pray and never give up. Always pray and never give up. And if you're new to church world, you might think this sounds exactly like something a church would say without knowing the context of the difficulties that might be going on in my life. Totally understand that. But Jesus understands that. And Jesus tells this story that illustrates that he might know more than we might think he does about the challenges and difficulties that we face. And while it might seem simple, always pray and never give up, Jesus tells us a story understanding that we have some obstacles, some challenges, some difficult circumstances to overcome in order to make our lives better and this year better than last. So Jesus tells us this story. And this was the story we find in Luke 18, verse 2. He, Jesus, said, "In a certain town, there was a judge who neither feared God or cared about men." There was a judge in this town who neither feared God nor cared about people. Now, let me ask you a question. Have you ever worked for this guy? Have you ever known someone like him or her? Like, hey, this person doesn't fear God and they don't care about me. And so in this moment, Jesus, like any great storyteller does, by the way, don't miss the interesting way that Jesus weaves this story. He's bringing us in. What Jesus is doing here is he introduces a villain. This is the Klingons. They had showed up in this story, and Jesus is saying, hey, there's some conflict here. Every great story has conflict, and he introduces the conflict here. There was a judge in this town who didn't fear God and didn't care about people. What this judge represents is the challenge or challenges, difficult circumstance or difficult circumstances that face you and me from time to time, or sometimes it seems like all the time. That's who the judge represents. He represents the hurdle, the challenge, the obstacle that's standing in your way to make this year better than last, or a hurt, or a pain, or an injustice that you can't seemingly get past. That's who this judge represents. And then guess what happens next in the story? You and I come into the story, and we're represented by someone. And this person in the story, don't miss this, this person in the story represents you and me. And here's the transition. And then there was a widow. There was a widow. And let's pause there. So you've got two different people. You have a judge who doesn't care about anybody, doesn't fear God, and then you have a widow. Now, here's why this person, this characteristic is so important. Jesus introduces us to someone who has very little rights and privileges. She's lost her husband. And in this context, in this society, women had very little rights, very little privileges. And now that this lady has lost her husband, now she, in many cases, we can make the argument, she's on the brink of financial ruin. And we don't know exactly all the details of what's going on in this story as Jesus is telling us. But in essence, Jesus introduces you and me to the story. He's introduced the obstacle, the difficult person, the difficult circumstance, and then he introduces someone. And when the disciples heard that there was a widow, I think they felt sorry for her because they knew that she didn't have a lot of hope, a lot of rights and privileges, and it was a seemingly insurmountable obstacle that Jesus introduces into this. And that's by design. Jesus wants to put these two together to illustrate, I understand the difficult challenge and obstacle you may be currently facing, have faced, or will face in the future. There's this judge that doesn't fear God or care about men and women, and then there's a widow. And here's how the rest of the story plays out. There was a widow in that town who kept coming. I love that. This is a clue to where we're going. She kept coming to him, the judge, with the plea, grant me justice against my adversary. Grant me justice against my adversary. This widow, every day, would come to the judge. She had very little rights, very little privileges, and she just kept coming to him saying, grant me justice against my adversary, day in and day out. And as she does this, she's illustrating something for us that connects to the consistency effect. Here's where we're going today. And if you can have these two powerful effects in your life, this is gonna be incredible. The consistency effect and the next effect is this. Here's where we're going. Consistency and the persistency effect. One of the things I love about this is both of these rhyme. I love that, by the way. The consistency and the persistency, all right? But let's get on board. We all know what persistence is, but just so that we're on board, here's a great definition of being persistent or persistence. Persistence is a firm or obstinate continuation. I love that phrase. An obstinate continuation in a course of action in spite of difficulty or opposition. In spite of a judge who doesn't fear God or care about people. In spite of a boss who might not fear God or care about people. In spite of a relationship, in spite of a financial circumstance or situation, in spite of all that, there is a persistence, an obstinate continuation to go toward the course despite the obstacles that might stand in our way. So there's the consistency effect and the persistency effect. Now, what's the difference between those two? Great questions. Well, consistency is what you do. We'll talk about this. And persistency is why you do it. Consistency is what you do, and persistency is why you do it. Let me give you a quick example, and I promise we won't spend but like 12 seconds on this, but exercise is typically a big thing in the new year, right? So what we say at the beginning of the year is, hey, you know what? I'm gonna work out more this year than I did last year. That's awesome. That is working out, and we should have more workout marbles in this jar near the end of the year. That's the what you do. But if you don't clearly define the why you're doing it, then the challenge of getting up early and refusing to hit the snooze button, all of that will begin to surmount such big obstacles that if you're not clear about the why you're getting up early to take care of yourself, then the why, when you, if you don't have that, you get lost. So what is your why as it relates to physical exercise? This, by the way, is why they created high school reunions, right? I mean, high school reunions is a really terrible idea, but it's a good idea in the sense you're like, I got 6 months to my high school reunion. I can't hit the snooze button. I got to show up looking the best I can. That's a why. It might be a silly why, but it is a why. Or I love how a friend of mine said one of the ways he takes care of the people in his life. I love this. He says, one of the best gifts I can give the people in my life is to take care of me. One of the best things I can do for you is to take care of me. Not just his physical health, but his emotional health, his spiritual health, his financial health. So it's not enough to say, you know what? I've identified an area and I need to be more consistent in this area. That's the what, that's fantastic. But what is the why? You see, for this widow, what she knew is I gotta go plead to this judge. That was the what. Every day she was at his office pleading with him, but the why was clearly defined. She wanted justice from her adversary. She was clear on her why. This is true also for finances. Like the financial situation might be the what, but you know what might be the why? The why actually might be your marriage. If you're married and you're having difficulty in your marriage, but really a lot of the challenges in your marriage are stemming from financial issues. So you go, I've got to get my financial house in order. That's the what. But the why is I want to have peace in my marriage. The reason all this is important is when we lose our why, we lose something. When we lose our why, we lose our way. When we lose our why, we lose our way. This is why I want for some of us, maybe many of us, maybe all of us to some extent, I want us to get angry. And what I mean by that is I want us to get angry at where we currently are. Maybe again, it's a financial situation. I want you to get angry at the exorbitant interest rate your credit card is currently charging you. And maybe for many of us, we don't even know what the interest rate is. You need to go find that out. You actually need to open up the bill and look at it and compare it to what it might typically be if you were financially free and paying no interest. I want you to get mad about the current state of that particular area that we talked about week one, because we have to be so dissatisfied with the current status quo that as difficult as it is, we've so clearly defined our why that we don't pay attention to how difficult it is because we see a better future for us. I want you to get angry in a positive Jesus-like way. I want you to get no cussing, but in a positive way. I want you to say, like that great theologian, Popeye the Sailor Man said, he said this, he said, that's all I can stands. I can't stands no more. Where's the spinach? Where is the spinach? That's all I can stands. I can't stands no more. And that's what this widow is doing. Hey, I know I don't have any rights. I know I don't really have any privileges. I know I lost my husband. I know you probably don't listen to me because you don't fear God and you don't care about men or women. I don't care. I have defined my why. I want justice. So you can get used to me. You can put, you know, look away, but I'm going to bother you because I'm going to keep coming. I want you to keep coming this year. Some of you have given up. Some of you have given up. It's time not to give up. Always pray and never give up. I'm not saying that. This is the story that Jesus is telling. Always pray and never give up. You're like, well, Jeff, you don't know my story. You don't know my situation. It's not as easy as this. It's not as easy as marbles. You don't understand how difficult it is. I might not know your particular story, but I've got my own story. And Jesus begins to illustrate this, because what Jesus doesn't do is, here's this widow. She's very persistent. She's defined her what, which is consistency, and her why, which is persistency. And then Jesus doesn't tell, no offense to Disney, but this isn't a Disney movie. They don't, like if this was their Disney movie, she would go one time to the judge. They would have kind of an awkward conversation. She would come back, and then they would get married, and they would live happily ever after. That's how this works. This isn't a Disney movie. Because Jesus is trying to let you and me know, I know how difficult that particular challenge is. Again, the reason he knows this is because of the next transition in the story. Again, masterful storyteller, this next line is so important. For some time, he refused. For some time, the judge refused. Now, we don't know what these three words technically mean. Is it 3 months? Is it 3 years? Is it 3 quarters? We don't know. But what I do know are 2 things. First of all, we've all been there. For some time, he has refused. She has refused. Life has refused. For some time, he has refused. And while we don't know exactly what this is, what we do know is this: it's longer than we want it to be. God, are you up there? Are you paying attention? How much longer? And typically, it's longer than you and I want. But in the silence of God, he's at work. Never confuse God's silence with God's absence. Never confuse God's silence with God's absence. And so here's this widow. She's pounding on the door every single day. She's clearly defined her what and clearly defined her why. She will not be deterred. And for some time, he refused. Sometime he said no. Ever been told no before? If you're young and you've never been told before, buckle up, it's coming. But how you push through the no will make all the difference. Now, several years ago, there was a mentor of mine that showed me something about what he would call the faith process or the ideation process. What I'm about to share with you has been one of the most helpful things to me that I've ever been taught from this particular mentor. So what I wanna do, I wanna walk you through this. And as I do, some of you are gonna find yourself in one of these 4 categories, if you will. But in particular, I wanna talk to those of you that are in the second category, because in some sense, we've all been there, some of us are there, and we will all be there again. So this is what my mentor said. He said, and think of it in the context of an idea. And it's not just relegated to an idea. It's true for relationships in all areas of life. But he says, when it comes to an idea, there's the birth of the idea. Oh, this is a fantastic idea. This is awesome. This is a great idea. And then somewhere along the journey comes the death of the idea, that the idea dies. And what happens next is so pivotal, because what you and I are required to do when the idea dies is to give up or apply the persistency effect. And when we do, what my mentor said is the next step is the resurrection of the idea. We just keep pushing, we keep pushing, we keep pushing, and then the idea is resurrected. But that's not even the best news. The best news is the next step is the ascension of the idea, that the idea is even greater than when it was born. And he said, Jeff, typically there's always, you know, an exception to the rule, but generally speaking, this is the process that we all go through. And the challenge is when this happens, and it will. We have 2 choices. We can conclude that's the end of the story, story's over, or we can apply the persistency effect and keep believing. Always pray and never give up. Always pray and never give up. You're like, well, Jeff, does this really work in the real world? Well, let me give you a couple of examples. One of my favorite podcasts to listen to is a podcast called How I Built This. It's a podcast about entrepreneurs, how they started and how they built their business. I love it. But as I listen to this podcast over and over again, it's uncanny that every single one, the ones that I've listened to, and I've listened to pretty much all of them, this is the process that they follow. Let me give you a couple of examples. One was a guy, a young man in San Francisco. He gets an email from his tenant, and they tell him that his rent is doubling next month. Well, he doesn't have the money to pay for that, and he notices that he has an empty bedroom. And so then he also notices in San Francisco, there's this convention coming in town and all the hotels are full. So he's a website developer. He develops a website and he rents out his room and somebody actually takes him up on it and he gets money to help pay for his rent. He notices the next week, the same thing's happening. He does it again. And then he begins to go, you know what? I bet I could get some friends of mine to rent out their extra room if they have an extra room. And that started to work. And so he had an idea. What if I could do this all over the place? His first idea was to rent air mattresses and go to condos and sell them so that they could lease out the empty spaces in their condos. That didn't work. That was a terrible idea. That was the death of the idea. Then he said, you know what? I'm going to go to some investors and see if I can build this thing out. So he went to 20 Silicon Valley investors. These are the real deal. These are the players. These are the guys that are actually investing millions and millions of dollars. This isn't your dad's stepbrother's cousin, uncle, friend who might have a couple of dollars in his basement. No, these guys are the real deal. And they heard his story and they said, let me get this straight. So people are going to put pictures of their bedroom and living room and kitchen online. And they're going to leave and let total strangers come into their house. That's the dumbest idea we've ever heard of. And every single investor said, no thank you, no thank you, no thank you. That was the death that Joe Gibbia experienced. But he, you know what he did? He applied the persistency effect. And as he did, Airbnb was born. Let me illustrate this. How many of you have ever stayed in an Airbnb? Look at that. You almost didn't. And it is now the largest hotel chain in the world, owning no real estate. That's brilliant. That's brilliant. You know, that's one example. All right, Dana Spinola. Dana Spinola is the founder of Fabric. We have a Swanee Fabric here, a fantastic store. Dana launched her Fabric store a few years ago, grand opening night. She said, Jeff, it was one of the best nights of my life. People were there. Family and friends were there. The sales were unbelievable. It was great. Whoa, I just couldn't sleep that night. I couldn't wait to get to day two of the business. I walked up to the business, and I noticed the glass was all over the floor. And someone had thrown a brick into her store and not stolen a few things, stole every single thing in the store, including the clothes hangers. It was like, remember that scene in The Grinch where he gets the morsel, the last morsel of food? And so she sits there in tears, calls her dad and says, what do I do now? He said, I'll bring a broom and a bucket. We'll clean up. She didn't have the money to pay back the merchandise that was stolen to her. So in that moment, the death of Fabric happened. But Dana Spinola knew the power of persistency. So she called all the vendors and said, hey, I don't have the money to pay you back, but if you can resend me some new merchandise, what I promise you is this, I'll sell all of it and I'll pay you completely back if you'll trust me. Today, Fabric has 40 locations and is on the Ascension Road. And what I want to share with you is that this is a powerful principle. One other quick one, real quick. There was a college student. She thought she would go into the perfume business. She had oils in her little vials of oil in her house. And one night she said, I got some chocolate ice cream. I wonder what would happen if I put the oil of cayenne in the chocolate ice cream. So she mustered it up and she had chocolate ice cream with cayenne oil. And she said it was the first time that ice cream had tasted hot and cold all at the same time. She got an idea to start her own ice cream business. She called it Scream, which I think is a fantastic name as a marketing guy. Ice cream, you scream, we all scream for ice cream. So she launched her business, Scream. One of the worst days is when she sold one thing. She sold a $3 ice cream cone. And Scream, in just a matter of months, shut down. Death, game over. And then she went for another year trying to figure out what to do. And some of you are there right now. And isn't it true that the year for her and the year for you, it seems like 25 years as you're trying to figure it out? And as she figured it out, one of the things she started writing down is, how could I have made Scream work? And then she came up with a different business plan. She applied persistency to her life. And she said, you know what? I've got a new plan, a new ice cream. And she went back to the shopping center where Scream was. And they said, no. For some time, they refused. You know what she did? She kept on coming. She kept on coming. At some time, that shopping center said, she keeps bothering us. Okay, will let you open up this door. And I'm so glad she did, because she changed the name from Scream to Jenny's Splendid Ice Cream. And this is a miracle from above, Brambleberry Crisp, I'm telling you folks. This is amazing, all right? Now, anybody want this on the front row? Oh my goodness, look at that. All right, I'm gonna let you choose, Jessica. And then, I know the back, you always get mad when we give anything out, so if you'll raise your hand, you'll maybe get some. And the meal, we're not forgetting you either. And this is dessert before lunch, that's awesome. But the reason I want you to enjoy this ice cream and to see this is this was here. Now it's all over the place. Now, the other reason I tell you this is one of the things we like to do at Gwinnett Church, our staff meeting, I like to bring different leaders in, different entrepreneurs, and have them speak to our team. It's always fascinating. Dana Spinola, the Fabric co-founder, or the founder, we had her come. She was amazing. I've invited Jenny to come to our staff meeting, but I'm currently right here with this request. So we're gonna send this portion of the video to Jenny's corporate office, because I haven't heard back from you lately, and I'm telling you, this is the second sermon I preached about Jenny's, okay? I'm believing this is gonna happen, Jenny, and I believe you're gonna come speak to our staff, and it's gonna be amazing, all right? Amazing, okay? So we gotta keep pressing on. Always pray. Never give up. So for some time, they refused. The world refused. The boss refused. He refused. She refused. Jesus understands, because this is back to the story. For some time, he refused. But finally, he said to himself, even though I don't fear God or care about men, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I'll see that she gets justice so that she won't eventually wear me out with her coming. I love this. You got to be like this, folks. Now, I know I gave you in that process, birth, death, resurrection, ascension, some entrepreneurial ideas. For some of us, that's not the issue. For some of us, it's a relationship issue, right? And I'm not saying we don't pivot from time to time. Sometimes an idea needs to die, but we can pivot from that. A prime example of this is the first few weeks of American Idol. They're not going to win American Idol because they can't sing, okay? The only person who thinks you can sing is your mama, and she's not a judge. So you've got to pivot from that idea, okay? So I'm not saying we have to ram our heads against the wall. Sometimes we have to pivot. For some, we bring our expectations, and those expectations die, and they're very difficult. For example, I was talking to a new parent recently. And it took her a while for her and her husband to have a child, and she had all these expectations, and then they have a child, and a lot of those expectations fall away, and it's real hard work. And as I walked her through this process, she felt, you know what, Jeff? I'm in the season of death, meaning that my expectations are dying. I'm like, hey, two things real quick. Number one, you will sleep again. There's coming a day you're going to sleep again. Number two, some of those expectations need to die, but God can resurrect new and better ways for you, new and better expectations and realities, and will ascend those for you. Some expectations need to die. That doesn't mean it's the end of the story. Some of you, let me talk to the students real quick. It bothers me, not just as a pastor, it bothers me as just a human being, that we put so much pressure on these kids to try to get into the right school and have the highest SAT score. And when kids see their SAT score and it's not as high as they thought it should be, they think their future is defined. Let me just tell students, you listening? Your SAT score does not define you. It does not define your future. Whether you get into a school or not, I'm all for higher education, but you can have the best school and you can have the highest SAT score and the world and life is gonna knock you down. Whether you get up or not doesn't depend on your SAT score. It depends on whether you have the persistency effect. It depends on whether you have what this great author is talking about. You're like, Jeff, this is all church stuff. No, this is true data. It's a book called Grit. It's a fantastic, fantastic book. And she said, they studied the cadets at West Point. And she said, what we've discovered is that the cadets who succeed, it has nothing to do with their SAT score or where their upbringing. What it had to do with is, did they have the grit to get up when life knocked you down? Students, got good news and bad news. Life's gonna knock you down. Life's gonna knock you down. You have a savior with nail-scarred hands that says, hey, ready to get up? Because I can pick you up. For some of you, let me just say this real quick. You saw birth, death, resurrection, and ascension. It wasn't a business idea to you. It wasn't getting in the right school. It wasn't a relationship that's currently going on. You've experienced a real death. And I understand that. When we started this church, you've heard me say this before, the first 9 months was horrible, personally, for me. We had a staff member who lost her wonderful, beautiful 7-year-old son, Creed, to cancer. I did his funeral. Then we lost Celeste McCormick, who is a staff member on Upstreet. A drunk driver hit her on Christmas night. 2 months later, I lost my dad. 5 months later after that, we lost Julia, an intern on our team. And in the span of those 8 or 9 months, I did 4 funerals. It was horrible. But I want to tell you something. Death is not the end of the story. And as a pastor, I have prayed for people for God to heal them. And some people have actually been healed. And I have prayed for people to be healed, and they weren't according to my timeline. And some of you are there. And here's what I want to tell you. In that death phase, in that grief phase, you and I need to grieve really, really well. If you're angry with God, be angry with God. He already knows. If you're sad, be sad. But the last thing you need to do is shove it down and not deal with it, because it will come out. But here's what I want to tell you. There is a resurrection. His name is Jesus. And there is an ascension. There is hope. Death is not the final chapter. And Jesus is playing this out in a beautiful way in this life of this widow. And however her story connects to your story and your circumstances, in essence, what Jesus is saying, this, the bottom line in Luke 18:1 was this: always pray and never give up. Always pray and never give up. Always pray and never give up. And then Jesus does something really interesting. He begins to transition to our Heavenly Father. And this is what he says. This is awesome. He says, and the Lord said, listen to what the unjust judge says. The unjust judge, who didn't care about anybody, didn't fear God, he even relented. If an unjust judge will do that with the persistency effect, imagine what your Heavenly Father would do. And will not God. We're not dealing with an unjust judge here. We're dealing with a perfect Heavenly Father. And will not God bring about justice? I don't know what that word connects in terms of your circumstance, but will not God bring justice for his chosen ones? By the way, that's you. It's not a coincidence you're here today. Who cry out to him day and night. Let me ask you, you doing this? Or have you allowed the depth of that situation, the enormity of that situation, press you down to give up? Jesus saying, don't do that. Cry out to your Heavenly Father day and night. And will he keep putting you off? I tell you, he will see that they get justice and quickly. What he's saying here is God is writing a bigger story. And I can't tell you when you're gonna see it, but someday you're gonna see it. And because of your faith and your consistency and your persistency, God will honor you and write a story that's bigger than you and I can imagine. And then he ends it this way. It's a really fascinating ending. And he ends with a question. This question changed my life 20 years ago in a very powerful way. I was in this goal setting club 20 years ago, still am to a certain extent. I mentioned the first week that I'm a goal setter and my wife is the fun one in our family. And so when I told Wendy that I was going to spend the day with a goal setting club, she said, nerd alert, nerd alert, nerd alert. But I was really excited about this, all right? So basically what we were gonna do, they sent us the agenda ahead of time, is write out kind of your life mission statement. Some of you have done that before, your life purpose statement. So if somebody comes up to you and says, what's your life mission statement? I would be able to say this after this exercise. I read this story again before going to the goal setting day, and it changed how I developed and wrote my life mission because of this powerful question. Here's the question. Jesus asked this: however, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? When I come to the earth, which means when I come to you, will I find faith here, or did you give up? And this question changed how I wrote my life mission statement. My life mission statement goes in several areas, and I'm not saying you have to write your life mission statement this way. I'm just saying this is how this question changed my perspective in so many ways. My life mission statement starts, based on this question, starts with these four words: I want to be found faithful. I want to be found faithful. So if Jesus comes back this afternoon, which would be really cool, that would be awesome. And if he comes up to me, and he comes up to you, and he says, Jeff, let's look at your life to see if you're faithful. So what I wanted to do is write this statement to go, to be found faithful as a husband to Wendy, what would that look like? And I talked about some certain characteristics that I think needed to be true. To be found faithful as a father to Jesse and Cole, what are some things that I need to do there to be a great, faithful dad? To be found faithful as a financial steward, what would that look like? To be found faithful as a steward of my career, to be found faithful as a steward of my physical health, that's a really important thing, to be found faithful. And as that, what I do want to do is to just live this out, to be found faithful. And sometimes that's going to require me, or actually a lot of times it's going to require me to push through obstacles, challenges, and hurdles to live out through God's strength this statement, to be found faithful. And what I hope for you and I hope for me is that Jesus, whenever we do have that conversation with him, will say, well done. Because when I come to the earth, will I find faith? And faith is being consistent and persistent even when you can't see it, even when you can't feel it, even when God seems silent. So what's the bottom line? Well, always pray and never give up. Always pray and never give up. Be consistent. So if we believe, I think we're all on board with this, that this year can be better than last, here's what it's going to require. Consistency is the what? What is that one thing that we got to do, that one area of life? Persistency is the why. Why do you want to do this? And here's the even best news of all. God is who can help you and me. And today I want to show you what I hope the end of this year looks like for you. I hope that when we get to the end of the year, that through God's strength, remember the prayer we asked you to pray? Lord, I need you. Please give me your strength for today. My hope is that this December would look like this. That the end of the year would look like this. And we have transitioned all of these consistent, persistent prayers and practices and disciplines into our lives. Now look, doesn't mean we won't be, the goal isn't perfect. The goal's not perfection. That's not the goal. The goal is to have as many marbles over here. And I really do believe through God's strength, we can get here. Consistency is the what? Persistency is the why. God is who can help you. And the cool thing about this, and I'll close with this is where we find ourselves as a church. Today, as I mentioned earlier, is the closing chapter, to kind of chapter one, if you will, as we launch a second location. I'm excited about what's gonna happen here in 2019. I'm excited about what's gonna happen at Hamilton Mill. But I wanna share with you a little bit of the story because it's really the journey that I just shared with you. Like 8 years ago when we started the church, we didn't even have a name. But we said, you know what? Let's call it Gwinnett Church, because maybe, just maybe, that God would give us an opportunity to have another campus because Gwinnett is so large. So we began to do that. And so we had the birth of the idea. That was awesome. And then a couple of years ago, or actually 2.5, 3 years ago, we got a call that there was a building for sale over in the Hamilton Mill area. Well, it was a former Winn-Dixie and a former church. It was just sitting there. And I thought, this is awesome. At Buckhead Church, when I was the lead pastor there, we actually launched Sunday morning services in a former Harris Teeter. So when I drove up to this former Winn-Dixie, I said, I don't even have to go in. We should do this. I was so bought in. This has got to happen, right? But one of our prayers as a church has always been, God, we don't want to move without you. We don't want to move without you. We don't want to move without you. So we acquired this building. We just said, what do you want us to do? Do you want us to move into as a church? Maybe we sell the building and give the proceeds off to other ministries. What do you want us to do? But there was the birth in my eyes. This is going to be Gwinnett Church Hamilton Mill. So we got together with our leadership team and Rick Holliday, who's the chief financial officer, and Lane Jones over all of our multi-campus sites at North Point. We toured the building. We got back in the lobby And we said, we do this thing called fist to five, fist to five. Fist being, I don't agree, and five being, I'm all on board, I wanna do this. So we went around the leadership team, I said, fist to five, are you don't wanna do this? You don't feel led to do this? Or should we do this? Every single one of them said, 10, let's do this. Like, wow, okay. So I said, Rick, why don't you pray for us? And Rick Holiday prayed one of the most amazing prayers of, God, what do you want us to do? It was amazing. And also surprising, because he's in accounting. And accountants are not known for that a lot of times, right? But he prayed like heaven down. And I started crying, which I know is not a surprise to you at all. Reed Moore started crying. I know that's not a surprise at all. And I walked away going, this is done. I mean, I can't wait for this. The very next day, Rick calls me and says, I don't know how to tell you this, but we just got an offer on the building. And I think this is maybe the answer to the question or our prayer yesterday. And I thought, you know what? I think you're right. He goes, are you disappointed with me, Jeff? I said, no, I'm disappointed with God. Okay, but I'll get through that, right? But that was the death. Gwinnett Church, Hamilton Mill was done, was over. And I thought, you know what? Okay, God, we prayed for you to make it clear. Then let's pivot to the next thing. What could be the next thing? But we always held our hands out. And that's what you needed to always pray, never give up. If it's not this, it's gotta be something else. My father-in-law, who's been in real estate all his life, said, it's never a done deal until you have a check in your hand. So it went on for several months. And then the week that the deal was about to close, the whole thing fell apart and it resurrected. And then I was over there last Sunday night with our volunteers, and that place has ascended to an incredible opportunity for the kingdom. I love it. And just so you know, I didn't have anything to do with the design of the building. The team is smart enough to keep me out of those meetings and keep me busy over here. It's absolutely, to God's glory, it's phenomenal. I tell you that to say that's where we are as a church right now. And I believe that God's gonna do something remarkable. But I say that to say, not just for us as a church, I say that to say that for some of us individually, because you're right here. You are right here. Can I show you a picture of what it kind of feels like to have your dream kind of die and feel like it's slipping away? It kind of looks like this. This is the closed down church, the closed down Winn-Dixie that we were potentially gonna walk away from. But if you'll keep praying, always pray and never give up, always pray and never give up, the resurrection will happen and the ascension will come in due time, and that looks like this. And this isn't a bunch of smart people. This is God at work. And so our prayer for you is simply, and our prayer as a church, as we close this chapter, is simply this: do it again, Lord. Do it again, Lord. Do it again, Lord. Do it again, Lord. Do over at Hamilton Hill what you've done at Sugar Hill. But not only that, for you, for that circumstance that appears unjust and you can't get beyond, simply pray and say, Heavenly Father, through your power, can you do in this situation what you always do? Show up and make things new and better. Father, thank you. Thank you for an amazing son that you sent us to teach us the story of the persistent widow. And my prayer for us collectively as a church right now, as we're on the precipice of a new chapter in our church, that we would simply say to you, do it again, Lord. And in the obstacles and the challenges and the ups and downs that may happen, that we would just simply be persistent like the persistent widow. And I also pray for every single individual, especially those that are in the death of a dream, an expectation, a reality, a hope, that you would just simply draw near to them and say, hey, I'm the author of this story. Keep praying, don't give up. Keep praying, don't give up, and see what we can do together. And that's our prayer, Lord. Do it again. Do it again. Do it again.